I Hate the News is the weekly news bulletin from I Hate Politics podcast, a show about a human activity we love to hate. I'm Sunil Dasgupta. It's December 24th, 2024, Christmas Eve. Major news in the nonprofit world, the Combined Federal Campaign, the workplace giving program that raises millions from federal employees for nonprofits, has launched a pilot program to make it easier for tens of thousands of small nonprofits to join the CFC. It is school budget time. Montgomery County Public Schools released its budget proposal with an ask of nearly $300 million over last year. That's 9% higher, three times the amount required under the state's maintenance of effort law. A new Montgomery County bill proposes raising Board of Education salaries from $25,000 to $125,000 a year and more. Stay with us.
I Hate Politics is brought to you by the Political Science Program at UMBC Shady Grove, where you'll learn a strong foundation in public policy, pre-law, and international affairs for an impactful career in a number of essential areas. Learn more at shadygrove.umbc.edu.
I Hate Politics is a podcast about our neighborhoods, workplaces, schools and streets, and our local governments as they function in diverse and democratic societies. This means our politics are messy, dirty, sometimes corrupt, with often self-serving politicians. But no matter how much we may hate politics, we are never exempt from it, even when we refuse to participate. In fact, the purpose of politics is to keep society moving precisely when we don't agree with each other, like now.
When I fall down, I will stay down.
Music for this episode comes from Sting Pain Index, a band for the moment spanning red, blue, and purple states, Maryland, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and Texas. Jeff Amos on guitar and lead vocals, Scotty Lowen on guitar and bass, Sam LeGrone on bass and synths, Ben Heath, guitar and synths, and Montgomery County's very own Planning Board Commissioner, James Hedrick, on the drums. Their new album is called Songs About Fracking and available on Bandcamp. Sting Pain Index. The Combined Federal Campaign, or CFC as it is better known, is the workplace giving program of the federal government and one of the largest in the United States. The program vets and lists nonprofits to which federal, postal, and military employees can designate donations as direct deductions from their federal payroll and donate their volunteer time. For many federal employees, the CFC has been the primary method of giving to charities. In the Washington, D.C. region, where federal employees are concentrated, being on the CFC nonprofit list means not only much-needed monetary support, but also signals that the nonprofit has been vetted by the Federal Office of Personnel Management, which manages the CFC program. A reputation marker, if you will. Over the last 50 years, the CFC has raised billions of dollars for charities around the world. At its height in 2009, the CFC distributed over $280 million to over 20,000 nonprofits. In the last 10 years, however, the CFC has seen steep declines in participating nonprofits and giving by federal employees. Rising and unmet administrative costs at the OPM led to the establishment of application listing and distribution fees. As a result, by 2023, the CFC raised $70 million from about 75,000 federal employees and benefited 4,400 nonprofits. This year, the CFC process for listing nonprofits opened as usual in early December, reducing the application fees. But last week, the program announced a major and surprising pilot program. It is dropping audit requirements for organizations with an annual budget of under $1 million and allowing these nonprofits to use a simpler cash accounting method that, until now, has made them ineligible. This opens up the CFC to tens of thousands of nonprofits who would not have been eligible to join the list. These audits can cost nonprofits thousands of dollars a year. There is still a fee, but local independent nonprofits can now join the list. Why is all this important? It is the giving season. Did you know that over 50% of all individual donations occur in the last week of the year? While the new changes at the CFC do not take effect until 2025, it is a time we are all paying attention to giving and potentially adding tens of thousands of new nonprofits to the CFC charities list is really big news in that world. Last week, Montgomery County Public School Superintendent Thomas Taylor released his first school budget for the school year 2025-26. He's asking for a total of $3.6 billion, which is about $300 million or 9% higher than the last budget. The school budget is made up of revenue from county, state, and federal governments. With federal funding expected to reduce, county funding increases by over 13% in the budget proposal. Meeting the entire increase will most likely require a tax increase. I called Esther Wells, president of the Montgomery County Taxpayers League, a longtime fiscal watchdog, about what stood out to her.
First, the spending priority is primarily for our employees of our schools. The superintendent is asking for an increase of 3.25% and a step increase in their salaries, which represents the lion's share of the entire $296 million increase. Also, the superintendent is requesting an increase of $40 million for the employees' health benefit plan correction, which historically has seen a deficit in funding to cover all of the payouts for our employees and retirees. So that's $40 million. And also for special education, that comprised $46.7 million increase year over year, because the superintendent mentioned that he's identified a need of 688 additional FTEs for special education, combined either classroom teachers and paraeducators to better provide services for our growing population of special education students like my son in MCPS. Also, the multilingual learners is the growing population within MCPS. And so the superintendent is requesting $4.3 million to pay for 47 FTEs.
FTE stands for full-time equivalent. It is how government agencies and others calculate the number of people working for them. As a shorthand, you can think of one FTE being the equal of one job. Esther, we do see some reduction, right, in central office
staff? Yes, and that was also relatively small. There is planned for a reduction of 81.5 FTEs, or about $6.3 million, for reduction in staff within central office, which on average is about $77,000 salary per year, which to me would be the day-to-day workers in central office, the ones that are doing the work and preparing the deliverables, whereas I would have expected that we would look at more the mid-management, the upper management positions that pay well into the six figures.
Now, there's also an increase in security staff, apparently 88 full-time equivalents.
Right. I saw that. I believe that's part of the discretionary section. Discretionary expenditures, the superintendent has stated, are things that they would like to do if they receive adequate funding.
Anything else noteworthy that you want to point to?
The superintendent has stated that, you know, his presentation, he mentioned that we're having broccoli this year. Which means we are focusing on our needs and we're focusing on right-sizing some things that historically has either been neglected or are not meeting expectations. And so between those three buckets that we've highlighted, I do think that that is spot on for the superintendent to request from a needs-based perspective. However, I do think that an additional conversation needs to start occurring from a what is realistic, what is reasonable of a budget. So, for example, going back to special education, again, as a special ed mom, I am grateful that a superintendent wants to receive funding for 688 FTEs in special ed. Is that something that MCPS can actually do if taxpayers found the additional funds that he's asking for? Or
what do you mean do?
Can you really fund those positions, or will it just be that taxpayers fund an initiative that you cannot materialize this FY 2026?
So your concern is whether they'll be able to recruit those
people.
Is that correct?
That they will be able to meet the demand with supply.
If they can't fill those 688 positions, what do you think is the answer?
I think the answer from a funding perspective is, yes, you think we need 688, but truly, what can you fill?
The real problem here is that there aren't enough teachers.
Correct. And I think with not having enough teachers, MCPS has been creative in their initiative for Grow Your Own. Or most recently this year with special education, they have the J-1 visa teachers that are coming from the Philippines on rotation for 3 years in order to help fill a lot of the staffing positions that have been vacant in special ed.
The problem with the Grow Your Own and the foreign teachers and all of that is there's never enough. The Grow Your Own is slow. Foreign teachers are not that many. You really have to change the labor market, which means essentially raising salaries.
To a certain extent, but I think after a while, it's the workload. It is the quality of the work that you do, because you can pay someone a lot of money, but if they dread coming to work every day because they don't feel supported by their administrator.
So one of the issues here is also that, you know, student enrollment is somewhat down, is down 1,000 from 161 to 1,000 to 160,000. It's in a large system is not that big a difference, to be honest with you. But the issue is even larger. The problem is not the number of students. The problem is the number of teachers available. So your class sizes are increasing despite a reduction in the number of students because the number of teachers and the number of students have to somehow match up. No matter what enrollments are, if more teachers are leaving the profession and not enough are joining MCPS, then you're going to get an increase in class sizes no matter what you do. I mean, I know principals, their biggest issue is literally putting a live person in front of a classroom every day. It's not a matter of having somebody qualified, somebody able. They simply will have no adult in a classroom because there are not enough people.
And I would add to that despite the decrease in overall enrollment within MCPS, the student populations that are increasing are special education populations where the class sizes are mandated to be smaller. And so the staffing guidelines, right, like that's the average, but special education classes are smaller. So it does then create that whipsaw effect that you're mentioning, where even though it's reduced enrollment, you would think, yeah, so then we need less money to fund our school system. No, you have more high need students that are above average per pupil funding that tamps down truly the impact of less enrollment, because now you're dealing with students with more needs. So I totally agree with you in that the teachers not coming into this profession, and coupling that with more students coming into the school system that have higher needs and smaller significantly smaller class sizes, that it is a recipe for why MCPS is where it is.
It seems like they probably need more money based on what you're saying.
Right, and I'm not saying we shouldn't pay teachers more money. What I am saying is that asking taxpayers to pay an additional 13.4%, if historically it's been 3% inflation, in one given year, knowing that there are other departments that need to be funded within the county, that's another part of the equation that I do not envy the county council in what they're going to have to do this upcoming year in trying to do, you know, all of the things that are now before them.
Yeah, well, nobody envies the county council. I don't think that's the issue. I mean, they are up a creek without a paddle. One big reason why, you know, people choose to live in Montgomery County right. is its school system. And it seems that the school system has been underfunded for years and years. That inflation-adjusted terms, the money has not been there. Based on what you're saying and talking about PEP and all these other programs, maybe even $300 million is not enough.
I'm not a no in that we shouldn't do the 296. I think we just need to, I think there's a revised version that can exist before even impacting any quality of service.
SOLs, more to talk about. Please come back.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Montgomery County delegates Lorik Cherkudian and Joe Vogel have proposed a county bill to raise the Board of Education member salaries. Here is Delegate Cherkudian.
The bill increases the pay, which right now is $25,000 a year for our Board of Education members. And the bill increases the pay over the course of a couple of years. It increases it to $124,000, I think is what it is. Folks who are serious about the Board of Education and the vast majority of the members, if not all of the members, are currently working full-time, if not more than full-time. There's been an MCPS study that surveyed them about their calendars. There's been calls for an increase in the reality that it is a full-time job. There's been a lot of concerns about MCPS, and I'm sure you've covered many of them on this show. And you know, the challenges that we're facing and the need to have a board that is overseeing a $3 billion budget, the 12th largest system in the country. A budget that's larger than some small countries, that it just is a full-time job. So once we accept that it's a full-time job, or should be a full-time job, then the question is, how do we want to compensate people working a full-time job? And the truth is that if we're paying them $25,000 a year, they're being paid less than the minimum wage right now in the state of Maryland. So then we say, well, what is the appropriate amount? And, you know, I'm open to there's advantages and, you know, there's cases to be made for different amounts. I will tell you my starting point is this $124,000 is because that is the living wage from the MIT living wage calculator for a single parent with two children. So if we want to be broadly inclusive, and I say this as a single mother of two who has run for office and really struggled with, you know, making it all work and works a second job, despite the fact that the legislature is a full-time job. If we really want this to be broadly inclusive and not just for people who are independently wealthy, have a spouse who's, you know, who can cover the bills or have a retired, if we really want to be inclusive, then we need to have salaries that are reflective of what it costs to live in this county. So people who really are living in this county can take on these jobs and put the time and the effort that these jobs deserve, that the students in this county deserve, and that is worthy of, you know, of our school system.
A few years ago, there was a commission that recommended an increase in the pay of school board members to, I think, around 60,000, and the assembly rejected that. What is your hope that this proposal is going to pass?
Yeah, and I think that same commission has a revised study, as I understand it, coming out soon. And so we'll see sort of new numbers based on, you know, there's been considerable inflation since whenever it was 5 or 6 years ago. There's you know, obviously, we're just sort of living in a different world with different challenges. So If I recall correctly, the House actually passed that bill. So because I remember voting on it, voting in favor of it. So and I believe that was in 2020, if I'm not mistaken. And so we did end the session early, and then I think it didn't come back. And so I'm, you know, if you watch the hearing, people have questions and comments and different ideas about what the amount should be and what it should be based on and what else we should add to the bill. So as always, you know, when I introduce a bill, I feel strongly about it, but I also am really open to the conversations that are going to happen. And so it's hard for me to know at this point. There's a lot of new members of the delegation. And so I think we have this opportunity now over the next several weeks.
If Board of Education members have what you believe is a full-time job, then they are going to be much more involved in running the school system, which has historically been left to the superintendent. Are you at all concerned about that?
They're already working full-time.
In increasing their pay, that you're going to sort of define their powers in a more clearer way.
We need them to be able to work full-time. They are working for the most part full-time, and we ought to be paying them full-time. That's what this bill is about. That doesn't mean that by itself it solves everything. And in fact, I hope we continue to discuss the other changes that are necessary. But this bill is really narrowly tailored to that aspect of this issue.
Lorik Chirkodian, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's all for this episode. Be sure to check out our feature interview series that comes out Friday mornings. I Hate Politics is produced by me, Sunil Dasgupta, with support from University of Maryland, Baltimore County. I direct UMBC's political science program at the universities at Shady Grove in Montgomery County, where, among other things, we explore and learn about politics, government, and society close to home. Music for this episode comes from Sting Pain Index, a band that straddles Maryland, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and Texas. Jeff Amos on guitar and lead vocals, Scotty Lowen on guitar and bass, Sam Legrone on bass and synth, Ben Heath on guitar and synth, and Montgomery County's own James Hedrick on the drums. Their new album is called Songs About Fracking and is now available on Bandcamp. If you want to share your music on the show or know someone else who might want to, please email us at producer@ihppod.org. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Wonderful Kwanzaa. See you next time.
Prick my finger on the sharp part and say the F word too and at myself and just throw it away. Evidence lacking any fingerprints. On the edge of the western desert, where these old towns have no meaning now, I'll be waiting for signs there. I'll be wearing my hair shirt. I'll be holding my tongue.